Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning, Lucy Bell with you, sitting in for Jessica Strutt on Focus this week. Thanks so much for your company on this Remembrance Day. Well, it was a beautiful weekend and summer has well and truly arrived in Perth. And as the mercury rises, that means one thing for plenty of us, the beach. As more and more of us hit the sand and head to the water to cool off, I wonder how many of you consider what's beneath the waves. A cheap gambit, perhaps, but today on Focus, the very real fear that many people have around sharks and the different mitigation methods being trialled to protect swimmers, surfers and water users this summer. Are we getting the balance right? It is their home, but it's one that we want to share with them. A new eco shark barrier was installed at Cottesloe late last week, and I wonder if perhaps you saw it over the weekend. What did you make of it? And does a barrier in any way change how you feel about getting into the water? Keen to hear your thoughts over the next hour here on Focus, you can call on 1-300-222-720 or you're welcome to send a text 0437-922-720.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
With me today in the studio, I have Phil Angers, who's the mayor of the town of Cottesloe, and from ABC Studios in Sydney, Nathan Hart, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Macquarie University. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Lucy, and good morning, Nathan. It's good to be here.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for your time. Now, I mentioned that a new eco barrier has just been installed at COT, and I am keen to hear some of the thinking behind that from you, Phil, shortly, and also to get your opinion as well, Nathan. But first, I wanted to hear what visitors to Perth's best known beach made about what they saw. Holly Edwards-Smith hit the sand to find out.
I think it's a great idea. You know, people can swim and not to be worried. And I just have my brother from Belgium and he's safe. So I can let him swim because there is a stigma about Perth and shark attack.
I think it's a great idea. We're not actually from here, but it's fantastic if people can swim safely and feel good in the water. I'm not too afraid of the sharks, but at the same time, I think it's great for kids as well and parents if their kids are out swimming.
I didn't know they were doing that, and I think, I don't know, hopefully it makes other people feel safe, but I'm going to go to ones that don't have the barrier because I think that more wildlife is affected than just the sharks by the net.
Perfect idea. Actually is, yeah. Seen quite a few different ones, but this is the best one so far that I've ever seen.
I think it's good. I think people feel more confident to swim and it can be removed. And as long as they monitor it, that it doesn't actually harm the environment underneath, I don't see any problem with it.
I'm really thankful for the eco barrier because I feel safer knowing that sharks aren't going to be swimming with me or my friends.
I think it's a good idea just for people's safety. But, I mean, this is their territory, you know. This is the shark's territory. If you're going to go in the water, you've got to deal with that.
Well, I'm only on holidays here, but this is welcome because you get people that would swim probably late in the evening and early morning, and if there isn't someone there, well, the shark barriers help to protect them anyhow.
I think it's great if it makes people feel safer coming down to the beach during the summer. It's awesome, and obviously we've got the choppers that go over all the time as well, so I don't know if it takes less stress off their heads.
I think it's a really good idea because obviously if it means that things aren't going to get caught in it, but it still keeps people on the beach safe, then it's kind of the best of both worlds, really.
I don't know, I haven't experienced sharks here before, but I suppose it's good for safety.
I feel good about it. At least people have been saved.
No, I don't think they should put them in because it's the shark's environment.
Very good idea because actually the last few years there were many sharks coming here, and this is the best as a solution for all these shark attacks.
I don't reckon it really matters. I mean, it's water at the end of the day. Without the net, there's still water. Why not swim?
Do you want a shark barrier or people losing their lives? It's a no-brainer.
A no-brainer. Thoughts there from the voices of visitors to Cottesloe Beach, where a new shark eco barrier has just been installed. Were you there over the weekend? Your thoughts are also very welcome on Focus this morning. You can send a text 0437 922 720. And thanks to Holly Edwards-Smith for chatting to all of those beachgoers. Phil Angus, a fair amount of support there by the sounds about your council's decision to install an eco barrier. Was it quite busy over the weekend with that 40 degree weather?
It was very busy. I went down, had a swim through the barrier myself and looked at it and saw a lot of fish and things swimming around it and through it, which is the important aspect of it. Luckily, a lot of people refer to it as a net. Of course, a net is totally, totally different.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in just a second, because I know that that's a point you're very keen to make. Nadia just mentioned on breakfast before, and I had heard from others, apparently a seal did manage to make its way through the barrier on the weekend. Were you there for that?
No, I wasn't, but I heard about that. But that's quite common. Seals can go clamber over rocks. I haven't seen many sharks clambering over rocks. So, and we've got a two-week maintenance period. The divers are down there each day just checking anything as the ropes move and settle in. Anything like that will be picked up very quickly.
So we will get to that question that you mentioned just before about the difference between a barrier and a net. But for those people that haven't been down to Cottesloe yet and haven't actually seen this for themselves, can you just explain for me what the barrier is, what it looks like, how it works?
Certainly. We're going out from the groin and going due north. It goes for 170 metres, goes past the pylon, and then turns back 140 metres back in towards the beach. So it's quite a large swimming enclosure for people to go in. It's made out of very heavy-duty reinforced plastic ropes, 300 by 300 mil squares, so it's quite a large fish can get through, but quite easily. Maybe even small seals will swim through. Seals will duck over it. It's got about a 30-ton breaking strain per square metre. So
fairly strong.
Very strong indeed. Yeah, I think people should be able to take confidence from swimming inside it.
I've just seen a text has come through already on 0437 922 720. This texter says, eco barrier. Sorry, sharks can propel themselves out of the water, especially when chasing their dinner. It's the swimming pool for me only. You have just said there, Phil, that there's room there for bigger fish and for seals to make their way around. What is it that makes this barrier a protection from sharks?
Basically, most sharks will swim just with their fin just below the surface. So they're not like a seal that dives over. They do jump to catch their prey if they're coming up from a depth. It's only about 5-6 metres deep there. So it's never happened, in my knowledge, from any of the shark barriers. And they've been around for a while.
Is it going to remain there year-round? As we've said, it was finished being installed on Friday, I believe. So first full weekend of summer weather and its chance to be used this weekend just passed. Will it remain there year-round?
No. We've made a decision to take it in the winter. So in March next year, we'll be taking it in and putting it back out in October. That basically, we're doing this for the surfers because they enjoy surfing there at the end of the year when the waves are strong. And also, it means that it's an opportunity for us to clean, maintain the barrier, check it, store it, and put it back. It should double its life.
And I imagine as well that that's potentially something that would appeal to people who like ocean swimming at Cod. I know that when I've been down there before, I see plenty of people swimming parallel to the shoreline, doing their laps back and forth. I imagine for those that have turned up this morning, perhaps for their Monday morning laps and found a barrier sort of in their swimming lane, as it were, that might be a little bit of a surprise. Were their needs sort of considered as well?
They were, and it shouldn't affect them. They can haul themselves over it. I've gone over it myself. If you push down heavily on the top, you'd need a couple of hands to do that, but people have hands, so they can get over it quite easily.
Lucy Bell sitting in hosting Focus this week while Jess Strutt takes a well-deserved break. I'm speaking to Phil Angus, the mayor of the town of Cottesloe, about the new shark eco barrier that's just been installed at Cottesloe Beach. Now, you were keen to make the point, Phil, that there is a difference between a barrier and a net. What is the difference?
Basically, a couple of things. First of all, a net is like a gill net, and you use nets to catch fish. They get entangled in nets, and of course, unless you get them out very quickly, they die. So all the barrier nets that you had in the eastern states, I've swum out there and got quite a shock when I approached them to realise they don't go to the surface, and they don't even go to the bottom. They're just sort of strips of nets. The idea is catching sharks unfortunately, you catch other fish with them and other sea animals.
Bycatch.
Bycatch, exactly. And when I swam out to it and looked down and realised the shark could just swim freely underneath it or over it, I came back to the shore fairly quickly.
You were mentioning to me just before you came into the studio that part of the idea for this barrier and its installation at Cottesloe, you'd been to Coogee and you'd been for a swim. Tell me a bit about that and why you wanted to bring this idea to Cottesloe.
Yeah, a friend rang me up and said, why don't you come down for a swim at Coogee? And I must admit, when he first said that, I thought, oh, why would I do that? When I got down there, it was a fairly rough day, but it was really interesting to see the barrier in place. And it had grown a little bit of weed on it, and it was attracting fish. It was like swimming in an aquarium. And the numbers of people there, I mean, it's sort of a bit out of the way, and yet there was people coming in from all over the place to swim there. And it's been highly successful since. And I thought, well, if Coogee can do one, Cottesloe maybe too.
And we did hear in that in the collection of voices from the beach a little earlier, a lot of tourist voices or a lot of accents. How much are their needs and their perceptions being taken into account with this decision?
Well, as I said earlier, perception is everything for people when they go swimming. If we can make swimming at Cottesloe Beach, I mean, it is the iconic swimming beach for Western Australia. We've always had a lot of tourists, but they've dropped off in the last few years. And also a lot of people, local people, have dropped off from swimming there. So swimming safely and the perception of swimming safely, I think, is going to encourage people back. It should make it bring back business to the beach for our businesses along the foreshore.
Can you remind us, Phil Angus, when the last time there was an incident or there was an attack at Cottesloe Beach when it comes to sharks?
I think the big one that frightened people was back in 2011 with Ken Crew. And I think also there was another guy that was bitten as well at the same time, quite badly down there. Dirk Avery was his name. And before that, there was another person who swam out around the pylon and disappeared. So there's been a few, not a lot. I mean, there's probably more chance of killing yourself on a motorbike than there is by being bitten by a shark. But people don't like the concept of being eaten, so.
No, they don't. And perception and psychology is a really interesting part of this discussion, and we'll be chatting a little bit later about that more when we speak to Blake Chapman. So more to come on that. I want to bring in Professor Nathan Hart here, Associate Professor, I should say, of Biological Sciences at Macquarie University. Nathan, you've been doing some really interesting research on different shark deterrents, especially for surfers, so things like bursts of bubbles, strobe lighting and sounds, and we are going to talk more about that a little bit later this hour, but I want to get initially your thoughts on what you've just heard about this new shark barrier that's just been installed at Cottesloe. What do you make of barriers as a form of protection against shark bites?
Look, I think it's a great idea. Obviously, the best way not to get bitten by a shark is not to go in the water, and the next best way is to be able to go into an area where sharks are excluded, and that's exactly what these eco barriers are doing. As has already been pointed out by Phil, they're very different from the meshing type nets, the gill nets, which are used to basically kill potentially dangerous sharks. And so by taking this alternative approach where you exclude those large sharks from an area, it should be very safe for people to swim.
Now, I understand that exclusion barriers have also been used on the East Coast, but with less success than we've seen on the West Coast. Can you explain a little bit at all for us about why that is, Nathan?
So Phil's already mentioned the net at Coogee, which by all accounts has been a success. But the way the nets work, and of course the need for a net such as the eco barrier to be anchored safely to the substrate, to the sand or the rocks, and come right up to the surface, means it's very difficult to deploy that kind of barrier in an area where there's substantial movement of sand or very, very rough surf. And the trial that occurred on the sort of north coast of New South Wales unfortunately wasn't successful just because the conditions weren't suitable for deployment of that kind of barrier.
I'm interested as well, Nathan, in picking your brain a little bit about, from a shark perspective, can you give us a sense of what a shark can actually see in terms of shape, in terms of colour?
So sharks are amazing creatures, and it's always good to remember that. They have this array of amazing senses, everything from vision and hearing to a lateral line, which picks up vibrations, electrosensory system, which picks up tiny electric currents in the water. And so they use all of these different senses to move around their environment and to find prey. Now, in terms of their vision specifically, they have quite an unusual visual system in that they're completely colourblind. So they don't see colours. Everything would be shades of grey. They're very good at detecting fine differences in brightness. They have good contrast vision, as we call it. But they're not very good at detecting fine detail. So their acuity is poor. And this may be one of the reasons why sharks perhaps mistake people for food sometimes and end up biting people.
We often will hear people talk about, or there seems to be, maybe it's an urban myth, that colour is has something or plays in some way into the way that we deter sharks. Mick Fanning famously changed the colour of his surfboard after having an encounter. Can you dispel that for me? You've said that they can only see shades of grey. Does that mean that yellow and other colours that we've previously thought might attract them, there's actually no substance to that argument?
It certainly seems to be the case. And we've only looked at a small number of the 500 or so species of shark around, but we know that many of the major families of shark are colour blind. And what this means in terms of what we think of as colour, those bright yellows or oranges, is that they're going to be a bright object. So in that scale of black to white, they're going to appear whiter than other colours, such as green or blue might be. So it's probably likely that fish are attracted to bright objects, and this makes sense, of course. Most anglers would know that if you go fishing and you use a lure, you tend to use a shiny reflective lure, which attracts the attention of fish. And sharks are probably no different. They're attracted to bright, especially shiny things. So the yellow itself, there's probably nothing in it in terms of colour. It's just the brightness against the background. So it's the contrast that they're picking out.
The contrast. And in that sense, I suppose, could it just be argued, Professor Nathan Hutt, that just unfortunately, with a shark, you know, seeing only colours of grey and not picking out distinct detail so well, that sometimes we can just appear like a really tasty-looking seal to them?
Look, I think at least some bites on humans would be the result of mistaken identity. And some work we've done in collaboration with Taronga Zoo, using their seals there and taking lots of pictures of those seals swimming, it certainly seems that from a perspective of a shark, a human on a surfboard paddling or even a swimmer can be mistaken for a seal quite easily.
On ABC Radio Perth, you're listening to Focus. Lucy Bell with you today, filling in for Jess Stratt. Now, I played a little bit of this earlier on the show. And I just think it's really amazing the kind of visual image that just a few bars of music can conjure in your mind. And that film, Jaws, changed the way that we saw and thought about sharks. And even if, as Phil Angers, the mayor of the town of Cottesloe, mentioned earlier, even if we rationally know that the chances of being in a car accident are far greater than the chances of being attacked by a shark, the psychology behind our fear is not so straightforward. Blake Chapman has a PhD in shark neuroscience. She's the Sharks Editor at Large for Australian Geographic and published her first book, Shark Attacks, Myths, Misunderstandings and Human Fear, in 2017. I asked her a little bit earlier why it is that we get so frightened at the sight of a fin.
The human brain is a really interesting thing, and once you start to delve down into the psychology around it, it becomes really apparent as to why we do have such a fear. Goes back to our earliest ancestors who had to protect themselves. So it doesn't mean that we're necessarily born with a fear of sharks, but because it's a predator, this biological risk to us, it's a very easy fear for us to develop. So we can just see one movie. It doesn't even have to be a real situation. It can be Jaws, or we can hear about a story on the news. And just from reading, you know, that one thing or seeing that one thing, we can very quickly develop a fear of sharks. And once we have it, it's very hard to break.
I think one of the biggest myths is that shark bites are happening all the time. The stories that come out on shark bites are repeated through the media. So we might hear about a single event an average of 45 times or even up to like 73 times. So our brain interprets that as the fact that these things are happening all the time, when in reality, they still do remain a really rare event.
So what do we know then about the statistics around shark bites in Australia, say, versus other places around the world?
So Australia does have one of the highest numbers of bites every year. The USA always tops the list. They always have the most bites. But Australia is generally second. We tend to have somewhere between 10 and 20, although on really high years we have had up to 22 bites per year. But generally we're around 15 to 20. Globally, we're only seeing about four, five, or six fatalities a year across the entire globe from shark bites. In Australia, we tend to have one or two a year. So again, very tragic and unfortunate events when that does happen, but really, really low statistically.
In terms of Australia, you describe in your book that in a way we kind of have this perfect storm of conditions when it comes to serious shark bites. Can you explain that a little bit for me?
We have the big three in terms of sharks here. So we do have great white sharks. They're always around in the southern part of Australia. They're what we term cosmopolitan species. So they do come into the coast and they will overlap in the environments that humans also use. We also have bull sharks, which again are very much an overlapping species. They inhabit rivers and estuaries. They're very much an animal that could potentially cause us harm. And we have tiger sharks in the northern subtropical and tropical waters. And these are the three species that are known to cause most of the serious bites on humans. We have a great climate here where people love to be in the water. As the temperatures are getting hotter and hotter as well, more people are using the water. So we do have this environment that supports overlapping water use between humans and sharks. And it's just one of those unfortunate things that sharks are in our waterways. They're a part of our natural environment. So if we're going to be using the water, it's just something that we have to be mindful of.
We've seen a lot of different approaches to try and protect surfers, swimmers at our beaches. A new shark barrier was installed at Cottesloe Beach, probably our best known beach, especially for tourists in Perth. What do you make about barriers and their use as a method of protecting people from sharks?
Well, I'll start out by saying shark bite management is an extremely complex and challenging task. So I don't envy anyone whose responsibility it is to actually implement these things. There are so many levels of intricacy involved. Exclusion nets are one of the really good methods if you have a good environment for them. So they've had a lot of success in WA previously. They've been trialed in New South Wales as well, where they didn't see that same success. So along with most shark bite mitigation strategies, you have to choose the right one for the right environment. And I think that in those particular environments where they can be effectively deployed and where they're properly maintained, they form a really good option for many different beach users. They don't often support the surfing community because of the way that they're set and the limited extent that they can protect. But for swimmers and paddleboarders and people who just want to have a splash around in the water, they're a really good option. So I think that they're both, you know, really good as a physical barrier and also a really good psychological tool that just allows people to get out there and enjoy the marine environment.
On ABC Radio Perth, you're listening to Blake Chapman. She has a PhD in shark neuroscience. She's worked as an animal health manager at a large public aquarium. And in 2017, she published her first book, Shark Attacks, Myths, Misunderstandings and Human Fear. Blake, in addition to exclusion barriers, what else works, do we know, here in Western Australia and Australia more broadly?
So far, everything that we've tried has had some success to some degree and a lack of success in other areas. Nothing is 100%, and that's something that's very important that people have to remember. In terms of shark mesh nets, so not the exclusion nets, but the ones that are just set as a finite distance out to sea, they're very much under scrutiny at the moment. They have a lot of bycatch, and there's really nothing to show that they are effective in preventing bites. Drumlines are quite similar. They can cause a lot of mortality to both sharks and non-target animals. And again, the amount that they actually reduce the probability of a bite is, you can't actually prove that. So we see things like smart drumlines, which are considered to be a bit better because you can respond to things that are caught on them very quickly, and that reduces the bycatch. But again, it's very difficult to prove whether these things are actually preventing bites. In some studies, we have seen that when they move sharks out to sea after they're caught and released from a smart drumline, they don't come back. In other studies, we're starting to see evidence that they might be coming back. So it's a very tricky subject in knowing what to do and what not to do. What I think the general groupings for me are between lethal and non-lethal measures. And the efficacy, the lack of results in efficacy from the lethal measures doesn't support those things in my mind. So the mesh nets and the drum lines, without being able to show that they are actually effective in reducing the number of bites or preventing bites, I don't see the point in using them when they're killing a lot of animals as well. I really like some of the newer technology, and I think that there's a lot of promise for things like drones and monitoring. So just giving extra money to surf lifesavers so that they can have that human surveillance. Again, it's not going to be fail-safe. These things can't operate all the time. You can't constantly have a drone flying over, and you still have to be able to spot the shark, which works in some environments, again, and it doesn't in others. So, again, they're not perfect, but they're a really great method in my mind because they're not lethal. Again, there's no environmental damage. You have the added benefit from preventing or reducing the risk of things like drowning. And they're really visible mitigation strategies. So it comes back to that psychological point. If people feel like that the environment is being watched, that there's someone looking out for sharks or other dangers, then they feel a lot safer and they can enjoy what they're doing better. And so having things like drones or helicopters or planes, it's been shown that people really feel safe with those things because they can see them in action.
That's sharks expert and author Blake Chapman. ABC Radio Perth, Lucy Bell with you on Focus today. And if you've just joined us, we are talking about sharks. Summer is well and truly here. Beautiful weather over the weekend. And as more and more of us hit the water, we're exploring the different mitigation techniques used to protect swimmers and surfers from attacks. A new eco barrier has just been installed at Cottesloe. I've got the mayor of the town of Cottesloe, Phil Angers, in the studio with me today. Alicia would like to know about fish getting caught in the barrier. Is it possible that they're going to get caught? What can you tell us about that?
Well, the barrier is designed to be 300 by 300 mils in squares. So it's not a net. They're quite large. Reasonable sized fish could actually swim straight through. We haven't seen any evidence of bycatch in as far as a barrier. Certainly with a net, that's what they're designed to do, is catch everything. But the barriers, no. So if they can get in, they can also get out.
I'm interested as well. We heard Blake Chapman say a little bit earlier, Phil, that one of her preferred methods for shark mitigation is monitoring. Now, that's obviously a lot cheaper, and it's something that a lot of people would be familiar with. You pay professional lifeguards to be at Cottesloe daily. Is the introduction of this barrier mean that you're going to take funding away from more of those monitoring methods, like having the lifesavers, having drones, having choppers? Does this change anything about that?
No, we're not involved with that side of things at all. I mean, there's two lifeguards, Surf WA, which is the professionals, and of course our own lifeguards, which are on the weekends. We still give different grants to them depending on their activities, and people still need to be rescued, not just from sharks. The barrier does add a safety feature. If someone gets swept out or gets into trouble, they can drift to the barrier and pull themselves back, but that would not replace having a lifeguard.
Can you just remind us how much you've spent on the barrier? How much will you spend over the next 4 years?
It costs $355,000 for the brand new barrier to be made and installed, and we'll be taking it out each year, and that will cost us, and putting it back, that will cost us $90,000 each year to have it maintained.
I've seen figures of around $835,000 over 4 years. Does that sound right?
Yes, yeah. That would include the GST, which we don't pay.
And there are only 8,000 ratepayers or residents in the town of Cottesloe. That's quite a hefty bill for them to be footing, I would have thought. How do you justify that in terms of value for money for local ratepayers and businesses?
The whole idea of the barrier, I mean, years ago, Cottesloe Beach was swarming with tourists and people who came and spent money in Cottesloe. That's dropped off quite dramatically. I mean, there's also a bit of a difficult period financially, but we believe that with more people coming back to swim, there'll be more money spent in Cottesloe, which also reflects in people's housing costs and everything else. So I believe it will be beneficial.
On the line, Michael Tusak, who, if I'm right, is a councillor at the town of Cottesloe. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, Lucy, I can.
Welcome to the show. What was it that you wanted to say?
Thanks, Lucy. Well, look, I do want to make very clear that the things I'd like to say are obviously my own opinions on the barrier, not reflecting the council or any of the other councillors. And my issues around the barrier are really how we've got to the point of the barrier going in. We've heard lots of the arguments about the drop-off in beach patronage and tourism and so on. But my concern has been that there's been no survey or no gathering of any data on that to work out if the shark factor is the cause of that. And obviously the town's spending a very large amount of money to deal with it. Not only we don't have the data that backs up the need for it, but we're not at this stage looking at measuring any of the potential increase in patronage to the beach that might result. So we're really spending a lot of money that we don't yet know whether it will be delivering on what we hope it will.
Thank you for that, Michael. I'm going to give Phil the chance to respond to that. Phil, how are you going to monitor or measure the success or otherwise of this net to justify that $835,000 over 4 years?
A lot of people don't realise it, but the surf clubs do have a spot count on the beaches, and I've been told that has been lower, considerably lower. Also had conversations with a lot of the shops along there. For example, Barquetta, one of the beachside coffee shops, called me yesterday to let me know that they were absolutely packed. So people are coming down. As far as not doing surveys, we're not obliged to do them. If we do a lot of surveys in Cottesloe, but this has been going on since 2015 when we first proposed a barrier. There's been remarkably few people who have negatively come back to me over it. So over all those years, when it's been on the news so many times, I think that in itself is a pretty large consultation.
On ABC Radio Perth, Lucy Bell with you on Focus today. And our discussion is around sharks. A new eco barrier has gone in at Cottesloe Beach on Friday. First opportunity for many people to see it over the weekend. Now, we've spent quite a bit of time speaking about swimmers, and that's largely the group that this eco barrier looks to protect. But surfers, another huge and very important part of our community, and measures to protect them is an area that Associate Professor Nathan Hart from Macquarie University has been looking at. We've had a text on 0437922720 asking about the use of orca audio and whether that is a deterrent for sharks. Now, I know that's part of the research that you've been doing, Nathan. Can you tell us a little bit about what we know about sounds being used as deterrents?
That's right. So there's some older research which suggests that some species of shark are frightened away by loud sounds, including orca calls. And, of course, there's a lot of anecdotal reports about the predation on white sharks of orcas, especially recently. Now, a student of ours, Lucille Chapuy, tested this specifically looking at orca calls and also artificial, very loud sounds that change in loudness and pitch, and showed that these really didn't affect white shark behaviour at all. Now, partly that may be because the testing needs a way of attracting sharks in before you scare them away, and so chum bait was used to bring sharks into the area. But anything that we're going to rely on to scare sharks away needs to be pretty robust. So given that negative testing, we don't think that orca calls are a reliable way of deterring sharks at all.
You have looked at other interesting methods as well. Tell me about the use of strobe lights and what you found by looking at that, Nathan.
So, yes, we went through a program of research funded by the WA state government starting in about 2012 and really tried to go through testing shark deterrents that you could buy on the market and also a whole range of things which were suggested might work, and that included things like curtains of bubbles, strobe lights and so on. So we tested very bright flashing lights, hoping that they would, again, deter sharks from a baited target. And we found that there was a marginal effect, but really not enough to rely on. Now, the rationale behind that was that bright flashing strobe lights have been used for a number of years as behavioural modification techniques with fish, trying to keep them out of power station, sort of cooling intakes and these sorts of things. And they've worked quite effectively under those circumstances. So it wasn't completely blue sky. It was informed by some other research, but it just didn't prove to be useful enough with white sharks.
And so is there something about great white sharks then that makes them, I don't know, cleverer, more curious, less inclined to be tricked than other species? Because did you have some success with other species, but just not in that instance, Nathan?
So I think it very much depends on the lifestyle of the shark. So we saw very strong effects of combined flashing lights and sound with benthic species of sharks. So these are sharks that live on the bottom, are generally quite nocturnal. Their behaviour is affected quite markedly by those sorts of cues. But it's the more active pelagic swimming sharks which seem to be less affected. Now, whether that's because they're smarter or bolder, we don't really know. It may have more to do with the fact that they're quite used to swimming around in bright light conditions with a whole range of stimuli coming at them, and they have to deal with them rather than just swimming away or freezing and not doing anything, as these benthic sharks tend to do.
Mm. You've also trialled burst of bubbles, like something a bit more sensory. Tell us about that.
So that was another one of these theories which were proposed many years ago and had some partial success in aquarium trials at stopping tiger sharks. So we thought this was something definitely worth trying. Again, it seems to be very dependent on the species. A small species of reef shark is put off by a curtain of bubbles, but large sharks don't seem to have any qualms crossing it at all. So we've definitely busted that myth. One thing which sharks don't like is having a burst of bubbles go off right in their face. I don't think anybody likes that, especially us. But sharks seem to get frightened off by that. But of course, that's not a practical method of keeping sharks away. You know, a lot of the time people don't see the shark that comes and bites them. So you need something that's going to be there and it's going to work. And you know, the eco barrier is probably a far more economical, at least somewhere like Cottesloe, far more economical and practical solution to that barrier approach.
You're listening to Associate Professor Nathan Hart from Macquarie University. He's from the Department of Biological Sciences. We've just been talking about some myths that he has been busting and looking at in terms of what does and does not deter sharks. Now, I understand that currently you've been working on a project looking at putting LED lights on the bottom of surfboards. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. So you've mentioned quite rightly that surfers are the group which are at highest risk of getting bitten, and really there's very little we can do for them because they're often out of the areas where you've got most of the nets and drum lines, and certainly the eco barriers are no good in those kinds of areas. So there are a couple of commercial products on the market for surfers, but with the exception of one, they're not very effective, and that space is still evolving. So we needed to try and target surfers and improve technology there. And so what we've taken is the approach that, going back to my earlier comments about mistaken identity, it certainly seems like sharks use that dark silhouette on the surface of the water, which is how a surfer or a swimmer would appear to a shark, as a cue to go up and approach them, whether that's to bite them or with any intention of feeding, or just to find out what the object is. The premise behind this was, if a dark silhouette is a cue for a shark coming up and biting you, if we can change that silhouette, then potentially we can prevent some of those bites. So rather than relying on deterring a shark that's already come in, we want to stop a shark coming in the first place. So what we've done is to, by putting a series of lights on the underside of, in this case, seal decoys, we've been very effective at stopping white sharks from coming up and biting those seal decoys. And so we're going to take this technology forward now and have a product which can be put on surfboards and stand-up paddle boards, potentially kayaks as well, and would seem to be a very effective solution in preventing bites by white sharks.
And how far away would you anticipate that seeing something on the market for surfers or suppers, stand-up paddleboarders, might be?
Hopefully not too long. We're in the final year of a three-year project funded by the Australian Research Council and in partnership with Taronga Zoo and the DPI. So we've got a lot of partners there who can help disseminate that information. We're also working with a company which will hopefully take that technology through to a product. I'm not sure how long it will take to exactly get to something that's going to be in the shops, but hopefully within the next year or two we might have prototypes which can be showcased and taken forward for manufacture.
Before we wrap up, Nathan, are there any other trials of this nature, like the one you're doing, or anything else that's caught your ear and eye internationally that we could be looking at here?
Look, there's people are coming up with different ways of trying to deter sharks all the time. The important things is they're tested empirically and independently by people who understand sharks and know how to do these kinds of studies. I mean, there's types of wax that you can put on a surfboard that's got chili and other things in it. And some of these, they might be good ideas, but they need to be tested. And in many cases, they've been shown not to be as effective as people had hoped. I think the other thing to remember, and you know, Blake touched on this a little bit with the smart drum lines, is if you catch a shark and release it, that's one thing. If you put a tag on it and learn about where that shark moves, we start to learn more about how the sharks live, where they go, and what they get up to. And that sort of information is very powerful. And we've been looking recently, actually, at correlations between environmental factors and the occurrence of shark bites. And it certainly seems to be that there are certain environmental conditions which make a bite more likely. And if we take that knowledge, we can then perhaps deploy our shark mitigation techniques, such as beach surveillance or flyover surveillance, and concentrate that in areas where we think a bite's more likely to occur.
On 0437 922 720, Jen has texted, "Hi, surely people should also be warned not to swim at dawn and dusk and when the annual salmon run is happening." I think Jen makes a really valid and important point in wrapping up, Nathan, about the things that we do know can reduce your risk of being attacked or bitten by a shark. Can you remind us of some of those key bits of advice on what not to do?
That's right. So the classic advice, not swimming at dawn and dusk, obviously is because that overlaps with times when sharks are known to be more active in hunting. They're stealth predators most of the time, and so they rely on those low light conditions to find their prey. So good to stay out of the water at those times, although they are lovely times to go for a swim. Other things you can do is try and stay away from river mouths, especially after heavy rain. This is a factor which we and a number of other people have identified as increasing risk. River mouths are often areas of relatively high productivity, lots of shark prey around, and so you're definitely likely to find especially bull sharks and white sharks closer to river mouths. And of course, you know, if you see a bait ball or something like that off the beach, it might be tempting to go out and have a look. You might see some dolphins, but equally you might have other predators there as well. So perhaps a good idea to, you know, stay away from that. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're going out, if you're doing an activity, do give consideration to, you know, taking a personal shark deterrent with you, because for some of these activities like scuba diving and surfing, this is really the only way to provide that extra bit of protection.
Thank you so very much. Associate Professor Nathan Hart there from Macquarie University's Department of Biological Sciences with some sound and sane, sensible advice for those of us that want to hit the surf this summer. Just before we wrap up, we are finishing a little earlier today because it is, of course, Remembrance Day. Phil Angers, what would be your message to locals and businesses in Cottesloe who are now going to see the shark barrier as a part of their summer scape this year?
Come down and enjoy it, and let's hope it brings business to the businesses and makes people feel more confident entering our iconic beach.
Thank you very much for your time today. It'll be interesting to see what sort of reports and reactions we get to this barrier, which, as I've said, is just introduced at Cottesloe. If you would like to listen back to today's discussion around sharks, it'll be up on our website. Just pop ABC Radio Perth into your search engine. You'll be able to listen back to today's episode. Thank you for your company.